once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Where you were here, Jeff, exercise his radio voice saying, here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
Wait, they already did where you did hear, not when maybe you would say it again, but you haven't, so...
Yeah, but I did say it, and I have, were you here, Jeff McClure, having said...
Well, but, yes, but you used a future sentence. This is just a very tense scenario here.
Well, you will hear is present.
Tense.
It is tense.
It's very tense.
Right, and
another thing, camping is very much intense.
But this is the interesting thing about it. I said
very intense.
Where you will hear... Not when you will hear. So we're talking about the radio program as though it is a where.
But you say where you will hear. So one, mm-hmm. you're telling the future, and two...
It's a place.
The radio somehow is a place. It's a show that
right.
you can't see in a place you can't go.
Right.
Just like the internet.
That makes perfectly good sense to me. And since all we're talking about on this particular radio program... Well, actually, we talk about other things, too. But mostly what we talk about on this radio program are things to do with finance, economics, and things of that nature. I think it's totally appropriate that we talk about the future as though it is the past as though it is the future, and the esoteric, ethereal existence of a radio program as though it is a place.
We should be politicians.
No, I think politicians can do it. What I just said made entirely too much sense
to be in
politics.
We need to make less sense.
Right.
How can we do that? What can we do to make less
sense?
Oh,
we do. Give us a few minutes.
We will
come up with something.
Okay.
Right.
I want to give every American free land. I'm going to lower taxes. I'm going to raise revenue to the government. I'm going to give everybody their own home, their own free college education, and... I'm going to raise the income and make jobs for people that don't have them.
You don't even look like Bernie Sanders.
Well, I don't think it was just Bernie that says that. Some of those statements come from
mixed them up.
Each of the politicians running for president right now, I just mixed them all together make it sound ultra unrealistic.
No, what you said was really quite sane compared. Donald Trump said that he was going to get rid of the total national debt in 8 years.
Right.
Lower taxes, not touch entitlements, and increase defense spending.
Okay, so that's to one side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hillary Clinton says she's going to destroy the corruption in Wall Street, get rid of it completely in her term in office.
Well, I was there, and it can be done.
It's just a very small street.
Well, there's really not that much corruption, because they pick up the trash and the garbage pretty regularly.
Right, it's got a street sweeper
very,
in there.
Very
the street, the street itself is not very corrupt.
That's right.
It does allow cars to pass on top of it.
In some places, they don't even allow cars, just pedestrians. And so, maybe the pedestrians are corrupt.
Yeah, so this is to let you all know, all the people that are actually listening. If you're not listening, you can't hear us, so But those of you that are listening to us now know that we hold most of the promises made by each of the presidential candidates.
Sacrosanct.
Sacrosanct. We are looking at those promises and going, huh?
No, they're sacrosanct.
Oh, we can't talk badly about them.
They're right. Religious promises. Anyway,
okay.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. It is, in fact, a radio program. And it may be at various points in time, which is why I said where, and I got my tenses mixed up a few minutes ago, quite intentionally, of course.
When and where?
You were
saying will, which is future
right,
tense.
The present, when we refer to the present in this particular radio program, the present is occurring on Saturday, April 16th, 2016. Now, if it's not April 16th, 2016, where you are,
then
while you're listening to this program, then there's a time warp that's gone on.
It's a tense situation again.
Yeah, and
these tense things are a problem.
It's like the book Timequake, see?
I haven't read that book. It sounds like probably it's self-explanatory and that time is
shifted. Right.
It's quaked.
Right.
It's a pretty good book. You could just read the cover and say, hey, I know what that book's about.
Actually, I started reading the book and got very confused, never finished the book. But the telephone numbers to call in here, if you wish to join with us on Saturday, April 16th, and discuss anything that has to do with economics or things of that nature, would be Area code 254 if you need one, 773-1400. Just by prescience, just to prove that time is running backwards here a little bit at least, somebody already knew the number and called before I gave the number. So there's a caller on 773-1400 who is now on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rick and Salato.
Hello, Rick.
Okay, but not Rick. Yes. Not Rick Von Salato. Good. Well,
not
okay,
this week.
Right.
Not
right.
This week.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, I was just getting up early, and I guess you guys got to get up early on Saturday too, huh?
We do, in fact, get up entirely too early on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Hey. And it's not even for cartoons.
Right.
I mean, I used to get excited about Saturday mornings. Now it's just to go and do my own program.
Wait a minute.
We'll make it as silly as cartoons if
this
you wish.
This is not a cartoon?
Maybe it is.
You
can't
yes.
see, so maybe we are cartoon characters.
We are toons, yes. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, what I'm not hearing about is what's happening with the President of the United States, Barack Obama, and Janet Yellen having a meeting.
They do that pretty regularly.
Do they?
Yes,
okay.
And uh-huh. neither of their spouses seem to be too upset about it, which should concern everybody.
Yes.
Okay.
And they tend to do it with closed doors, and they don't let people in there. So this sounds a little bit suspect to me.
Yep, and also some other things. That means they're going to have quite a few meetings this week, this month, right?
There is a one of the perks of working in a an area that people would consider Wall Street is we get to go to these many conferences that have the keynote speakers that are paid many hundreds of thousands of dollars that no one wants to read the transcript, or everybody wants to read the transcript, but nobody's going to give you the transcript. Is we get to hear a lot of stuff that they say with the expectation of having no media influence.
Okay.
So let me answer that real quick, and then you'll go to your
go for it.
Okay.
I got some more.
One of the great, amazing interviews that we sat very close to the people being interviewed was Alan Greenspan being interviewed on his days in the Federal Reserve. And he spoke specifically about a closed door meeting that he had with George H.W. Bush. And Alan Greenspan speaks in a almost whispered monotone.
He mumbles.
And everybody in the room leans closer and just tries to listen as hard as possible.
But it's highly coherent mumbling as opposed to incoherent mumbling.
Right, right. So if he were sitting on a sidewalk in New York, people would not pay attention. But as the Federal Reserve chairman, people did.
Right. He was sitting on a sidewalk in Washington, D.C. They would pay attention.
Yes, they did. So one of the things that he said is that the president, George H.W. Bush, came to him and said, "What are you doing raising interest rates? I'm about to be in an election cycle, and this is likely to cause a recession." And Alan Greenspan said, "I fully expect it will cause a recession, but if I don't do it, we're going to have horrible inflation." George H.W. Bush said, "Please don't do it." And Alan Greenspan, who said one of his favorite presidents to work for was George H.W. Bush, said, "I have to do it anyway. It's my job." So that's the relationship that the Federal Reserve chairman is supposed to have with the president. When they have their sit-down meetings, they have conflicting interests. They have interests. One wants to be reelected or wants their party to remain in power. The other one has a direct role to play given to them by both the president and Congress to say that they need to control the money supply, and they've got some extra things trying to control the volatility of the market and the employment situation, which makes their job almost impossible.
Well, let me also say something about this meeting that the president and the chairman of the Federal Reserve had. There were reports through the underground network,
I think they come up through the bottom of the Oval
Office. But it actually goes through satellites.
The underground satellites.
The same
gotcha.
Very reliable reporters that noted that the Special Forces and the SEAL Team 6 were going to take over Texas, causing our governor to activate the elements of the Texas Guard, which aren't authorized to have weapons because they would probably shoot themselves. to go out and ambush the special forces units and prevent them from taking over the state of Texas. And apparently they were quite successful because, if you notice, remember that big scare?
Right. We did not get taken over, right. So the Texas Guard did its job properly.
The Armed Forces Special Units, Special Combat Units of the United States, did not take over the government of Texas. So Texas Guard was successful.
Totally noticed that.
Right.
That it didn't happen. So well done, Texas Guard.
Right. So
thank you, Governor.
The story went around in the undercognitive media that the reason that Janet Yellen was meeting with President Obama was they were going to declare martial law.
I'm going to mumble the name of the underground media if
what
you don't
it?
Mind.
Yes,
InfoWars.
Oh well, whatever. Anyway,
you guys are going to go over some current stats as far as GDP right now, forecast,
no.
Monetary supply.
No.
If you want us to.
We can, but it'd bore everybody to death.
We can do it. I mean, we have the data, but.
No, just talk about, are there any bubbles right now?
Oh, okay.
Well, I had some beer last night, and I noticed that there were numerous bubbles in the beer.
Gas X.
Okay. Yeah, right. Yeah, bubbles.
Yes. Bubbles too? We can give you, I know of at least one bubble right now.
Okay. All right. I'm going to get off and listen to
okay.
Okay. And by bubble, I don't mean the gaseous kind.
Really?
Maybe. Yeah.
Okay.
I got up too early, so you guys can put me to sleep.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds
good.
Good.
The GDP. We could forecast the GDP. It will be somewhere between 1 and 3%, maybe 3.5 for this year.
Uh-huh. That would be my forecast, too.
Yeah. It won't be. It probably won't be zero.
We've just had disappointing numbers come in from the first quarter.
Really?
Well, not just. It's disappointing numbers from the first quarter and for earnings and so on. One of the things that's fascinating there is if you go back to the first quarter, we talked about this last year at this point, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
There are
And the year before.
And the year before that. The first quarter.
Yeah, but it gives us something to talk about this time of year because there's not much else going on.
They are still working on the formula that they're using to come up with the GDP, and they change it every year. And they're changing it so that they can get a more accurate read.
They, by the way, means the bureaucrats in the Bureau of Economic Analysis.
Right. And they have not figured out the first quarter. One of the things that you
hear... Well, they're bureaucrats. What do you expect?
I totally agree. They've got at least 30 years to get this right, and then they're going to retire, and then it'll be the next person's 30 years.
Wait a minute. They did release their third estimate of last year's GDP.
Right. The one of the key pieces of wordage that gets dropped off in a lot of the headlines when they say GDP was reported at is that they missed two words, seasonally adjusted. These are two of our favorite words to throw around because if you don't seasonally adjust your food, it's very bland. Well, no, that's not what I mean. Seasonally adjusting the GDP means that in, for instance, the summer, we have a huge boost to the economy. But if we're going to annualize that, wait, what happens in summer that causes a huge boost to the economy?
I don't know. Maybe the sun comes up earlier?
Well, that's part of it. The other big part is a bunch of people that were in school are suddenly wanting a job. They get into the job business, and when they're in the job business, they're making money and they're actually spending money rather than saving money or trying not to spend money.
And a lot of them go to work just for the summer, and then they quit at the end of the summer.
Right. So you have a season that needs to be adjusted to make it look as an annual basis.
Right.
And that's a problem because each year you have to adjust that season differently because different numbers of people get jobs during that season. And if there's a higher unemployment rate, it's harder to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just take the same number every year and throw it into the mix, it comes up with really wonky results. And wonky is our technical word of the day. And the Bureau of Economic Analysis has some wonky numbers. They're not extremely wonky. They're just wonky enough that we look at the numbers and we go, yeah, well, the second quarter is going to look great, just like it did last year and the year before. The first quarter looks horrible.
Well, actually, it's by the third quarter, thickly.
Right.
The second quarter sometimes is a bit wobbly.
So if we know this is happening, and we do, because every economist out there that's not a bureaucrat at the Bureau of Economic Analysis talks about this, that the numbers are wonky, that they don't have the first or the second quarter down right, and maybe not the third or fourth either, but they look more realistic than the first and the second, the average of all of them comes back to the correct numbers. So now they have to figure out where they're messing up. So people that ask us about the GDP usually want us to say some numbers to them. In this case, I'm saying these are how the numbers are come up with.
The first quarter has been miscombobulated. That's
another technical. It's right up there with wonky. So discombobulated and wonky.
I was trying to think of a Bushism. There's a Bushism in there someplace about misunderstood. No, it's not misunderstood. He used something like that. But anyway,
misunderestimated.
Misunderestimated. That's right. It's misunderestimated, and the reason is what they do at the Bureau of Economic Analysis over a long period of time is look at seasons and notice that certain quarters tend to be higher or lower very consistently year after year after year by a certain amount. And very frankly, there has been a major change in the past, 7 years or so.
Right.
That has not yet had a long enough effect for them to properly factor it in. And I don't know if you think back that long, but in 2010, for example.
I can't think back that far. I'm having trouble thinking to the beginning of this program. So,
but they
2010 is a long time ago. That's like decades or something, at least 6 years.
In 2010, there was a huge blizzard in the Northeast in the first quarter.
Yeah,
and that was a real shock to everybody
because they don't generally get big. Or up till now, haven't had big blizzards.
Since
up there.
Then, almost every year they have had a major, and sometimes multiple major blizzards in the Northeastern United States that shut down the entire economic activity of the Northeastern United States, including Washington, D.C.
Well, that's the important place if you're a bureaucrat, because that means the whole world shuts down.
For one or more days, which one working day missing out of a quarter really does change the numbers.
Yeah, let me throw in one other factor here, because it's very timely. You know, generally we have a deadline for filing taxes of the 15th of April, unless it falls on a weekend, and then they move it to the Monday following.
And the 15th fell on Friday.
It fell on a Friday, and yet taxes are due and the returns are all due on the 18th. Do you know why?
Because nobody gets much work done on Friday.
No. It's close to that, very close to that. There is a holiday that is only recognized in Washington, D.C.
Which is?
Emancipation Day. Emancipation Day this year fell on April 15th. Because the holiday was observed in not even a state, a district. But it was to the bureaucrats, the people at the IRS are the ones that set the dates. That's the most. They don't want to come in on their day off
to
mess with our taxes.
That's a critical district.
So for the entire nation, I don't mind. I mean, an extra weekend is nice to have when filing taxes, but this is an momentarily timely example of why it is that bureaucrats get things wrong sometimes, because they base the whole world on their individual circumstances.
But it's right. It's CPA Emancipation Day.
Right. CPA Emancipation Day, April 15th.
I don't mean in any way to denigrate in any form or fashion the Emancipation Proclamation.
Nor do we wish to denigrate CPAs, who are very smart people.
Yes. But
this is humorous any way you want to look at it.
We do have an interesting situation.
As
far as the GDP is concerned, if you really want to follow, if you're interested in those numbers, Rick Von Salado, you might want to go to the BEA site or anywhere you go to the Commerce Department and look for the GDP numbers. There's a fascinating number that economists really do pay attention to, and it's called nominal GDP. Nominal GDP is unadjusted for either, it's not adjusted for inflation, it's not adjusted for exports, imports, and it's not adjusted seasonally. And it is a fascinating number. And
we preferred looking at that number.
I really would like it if they would just release the nominal GDP numbers. Now, the problem, of course, is if you're looking at it short term, it's going to drive you crazy because they jump up and down.
There's no smoothness to it at all.
It's very much like the fact that we have a business. And if we look at our month-to-month profitability, oh, man, does it stink. It's terrible. For example,
you don't know what you're going to make next month.
For example, this month is, I think it's is it this month? Yeah, this month, in the middle of the month, we pay first quarter self-employment taxes and a bunch of other stuff in a big lump sum. And if we were to take, so that would mean that every April, we effectively, for that month, probably take a loss.
Well, and in February, we did reasonably well. Even with the market down, mm-hmm. our business did well. And we look at it compared to last February, and it's not quite as good. The market's a little bit down from there. But, you know, we did fairly well. And we look at it and say, why is that? The market's down in February. Because there was a leap year this year, and we had an extra day.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to regularize your data with irregular information, you get some weird stuff coming up.
Probably the best way, if you want to know an annual GDP, is not to pay any attention whatsoever to the quarterly, but simply look at where is the economy versus where it was a year ago at this time.
But if you do that, it means that you have to avoid the 24-hour news cycle because they want it to be reported daily, not this quarterly business. But quarterlies...
Wow. Now, that would be... No, wait a minute. You're getting something started here. Now, we could start a new... Economic
yes, annual news cycle
where
we have a program once a year.
We report the daily GDP annualized estimates.
Oh man, would that be confusing?
And we and the other thing that's noted. I mentioned this in passing a few minutes ago. The gross domestic product of the United States third estimate came out at the end of last month.
So the third estimate that's likely to...
For all of last year,
right? It's likely to remain the final unless they decide to do a fourth, and sometimes they do six re-estimates of GDP.
So with any luck at all, by 2017, we'll have some degree of an accurate report as to what 2015's GDP was.
Right. We're pretty sure we know what the GDP was in 2010, but that's only because people have all agreed to stop messing with it.
Well, actually...
we actually do have numbers that have come in. It's a pretty accurate figure at this point.
But sometimes, and this does happen from time to time, they look at it and said, oh, wow, we've been mismeasuring this stuff all along.
Right.
And they,
we're going to change it all.
They revise GDP estimates going back to NOAA.
Yeah.
and they don't have any accurate estimates before NOAA.
Yeah,
so
I think everything was underwater for a while.
Yeah,
all the real estate market was underwater for pre-NOAA.
Let's do something very different here and talk about the stock market.
Okay, let's do that.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average continued to average itself regularly for the last week. It, for whatever it's worth, was up about 1.82. I had to look closely to see what I was looking at. It's up 1.82% for the week. Year to date, it's up 2.71. Doesn't that sound exciting? I mean, just over a quarter, and it's up 2.71%. That means if it were just to continue that for the rest of the year.
It was a lot more exciting than that because the drop before it was
there really
larger
wasn't one. I mean, just a tiny little rise from the beginning until now.
And nice. Averages are great. When you've got 1 foot in boiling water and 1 foot in dry ice, your average is great. You're probably not very comfortable.
The S&P 500. Year-to-date, up 1.8%. For the week, it was up 1.62%. Now, that should right there should tell you something. Almost all the gain for the entire year-to-date occurred last week.
Well, it was a good week.
It was. I mean,
we appreciate that week.
That
week appreciated.
For 52 weeks, for 1 year, the S&P 500 is down 0.02%. Isn't that neat?
0.02%.
Yes, for 1 year.
0.02%.
Yes, but
a percent by itself is decimal points.
But if you actually read anything other than barons, the big news is what it did on Friday, not the week, not the year to date.
Right, because they don't report on a week or a year basis. It's days. We want to know about the day.
And, of course, the interesting thing to me is that 1 year is as long as you find just about anywhere, because that is extremely long-term
with
to trade.
With the news cycle, I mean, a year. Who wants to remember longer than that? I mean, that's hard work to remember a year ago.
During the day, I get these news bulletins in how much the various market indices were up or down in the last 5 minutes.
Yes. Or we get these headlines that say, market moves more than it has at any time in the last 3 weeks.
Sometimes in the last 3 minutes.
And we go, oh, that's very nice. I'm glad you told us that.
But there's an important element here. And that is that if you're looking at an investment portfolio right now, stocks generally outperform bonds over the long period. And stocks have a roughly, if we use the S&P 500 as a proxy for stocks, has a zero return over the last year and a near zero return over the last 2 years. And it depends on which index you're looking at. They may have a slight positive, a slight negative. And that is just where it is. Now, of course, you could have had your money instead of in the stock market. You could have jumped over and gotten into something that was interest-bearing for that period, in which case your total return would have been zero.
Interest-bearing at zero. Stock market at zero.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so,
what else do we have at zero?
The alternative, of course, is to go someplace where they will promise you that you will make a very high guaranteed interest rate for a long period of time and take no risk. And you will feel much better about your money because you won't see the statement values moving around because they won't tell you what the underlying portfolio is doing. And it will be a number of years before you figure out that you probably lost a lot of money. But you'll feel much better about it. So that's the story. In fact, the issue is that the short-term interest rates right now, I know a lot of people think there must be some place better to get a good interest rate. The baseline interest rates that everything else references and everything else works off of are treasuries. The 1 year U.S. Treasury rate right now, in other words, if you had driven up on Friday to the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and purchased on Friday a 1 year Treasury note, which you could do, by the way.
Yeah, can
with
you
no commissions?
Can you walk into the Federal Reserve of Dallas and actually buy them right there?
You actually have
I thought you had to participate in an auction.
No. They actually sell them directly to the public right there.
Oh, well, that's very nice of them.
And up to 1 year, you can notes. It's all you can buy is notes.
Right. Okay.
Bills. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because up to 1 year, it's a bill. You can actually up to 2.5 years, it's bills. But anyway, you can go in and buy a 90-day or 1 year Treasury bill from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Now, it's not that there's truly no commission, because you have to drive up there on I-35 and you have to drive back. So there's risk involved in purchasing this security, but it's only from the fact that you have to drive on I-35. You can do it online or by mail. It's a bit more complicated, but you can do that. And, of course, there is the cost of parking in Dallas. So that's your commission. And let's say you put $100,000 or whatever in there. Here's the point. You would get 0.51% for purchasing this security that may go up or down during the ensuing year before it matures. If you were to go with a 90-day T-bill, you actually buy those at a discount. You buy them below the price that they're going to pay you in 90 days. You would receive 0.23% interest. So when you go to the bank and you see that they're not paying much, recognize that that's because not the bank is being nasty or somebody's being nasty. It's because short-term interest rates really are terrible. Now, you could get a much higher interest rate if you were to commit your money for 10 years. 1.75%. Of course, that's taxable.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd only get about 1.4% if you had 20% withholding. But the point is that, again, the 10-year treasury is 1.4%. And the immediate response that I get when I talk to people about this is, oh, yeah, but I could go out and buy a fill-in-the-blank and get a higher return with no risk. Not true. The higher interest return that you get on, for example, a municipal bond will have a higher risk. Why does it have a higher risk? I don't know. But this I can tell you, there is an immutable law of finance. And that is, if somebody is paying you a higher interest rate than a treasury security, you are taking more risk than you do with the treasury security. That's, I can't emphasize enough. If somebody, and I have heard people report to me that they were offered a 7% guaranteed rate on annuities. Now, I don't know where in the only 7% that I know of on annuities is the commission to the sales agent.
You know, that I was asked, we were asked to say if there were any bubbles about. I would say the annuity market has some bubbles in it.
But the nice thing about the annuity market is they don't actually have to cough up the money for 15 years.
Right.
And so if you got into that bubble, you really won't know if you lost money for 15 years.
Correct.
And if the company's still here.
Yeah.
Of course, if the company disappears, then you will probably recognize that you lost some money.
There's a whole series of lawsuits going on out there, class action lawsuits against companies that life insurance companies. Those are the ones that release annuities. And there are a lot of big lawsuits going on right now, class action, saying you guaranteed us an interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
And you're giving us that interest rate, but you've raised the insurance costs or the internal fees to manage the portfolio to make up the difference. Mm-hmm. And that means you're not really giving us the guaranteed interest rate. And that's the thing that the jury's going to have to decide. If you raise all the fees inside and still give the income, but
right.
you're giving an income and then taking it away from fees...
There was a large one filed against Transamerica recently
right.
on that.
Where it's they, not. Where they, there's a whole series of them out there. I mean, a lot of companies.
And what happens is a lot of the insurance companies in years gone by, for instance, Transamerica in this particular case, guaranteed a minimum interest rate on a universal, not a variable universal, mind you, but a universal life product. They guaranteed a 5.5% interest rate at the least. And back in the 1990s when these things were issued,
they said, of course,
that was reasonable.
Everybody's paying that. That's no problem.
But today, the fact that they're having to pay out a 5.5% interest rate means that a lot of people have put enough money in their life insurance policy that they never, at 5.5%, there's enough money in there to pay for the life insurance policy for the rest of their life. And that's the reason they bought it, and that's how it was sold to them. But then Transamerica triggered, and other companies may have done this too. I just saw this one article on Transamerica. Transamerica triggered a clause in the contract that says we can raise the amount we're charging you internally for the life insurance. And the lawsuit says what you're doing is effectively reducing the interest rate by charging us more money, and you guaranteed a 5.5% interest rate. It's a fascinating idea because what the lawsuit says is, yeah, you can raise it's called the mortality rate, the amount they're charging as a death risk, if you have experienced people dying more rapidly than you expected. But in fact, what you've experienced is people are not dying as fast as you expected. You have a lower mortality,
right.
But you raised the mortality rate because you looked at the interest rate on it and said, we were really stupid when we wrote this contract to these people, and we're not going to make as much money as we planned. Therefore, raise the internal expenses.
We're not spending as much money internally on the payments to people that family of people that died, but we're spending a lot more than we expected on the interest payments.
Yeah.
So we're going to raise the entrance, and then
it'll be interesting to see how that lawsuit turns out, because if it turns out the way the litigants want, the profitability for a lot of insurance companies is going to be really unpleasant. And that's, you know, we mentioned in the past, the caller earlier asked if there was a bubble someplace. There are certain indications. I don't know that there's a bubble. There's certain indications.
It's at least frothy.
That the bond market could have some difficulties. And the reason is the bond market isn't a big exchange.
No.
Like the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ or something. It is a bunch of individuals and companies out there who, quote, make a market in bonds. And because of the extremely low interest rates that are and negative interest rates around the world, it's very hard. It's very difficult for them to make a profit trading bonds. Combined with the fact that it was bond trading that triggered the big blow up in 2007 through 2009. Therefore, the Federal Reserve and the Financial Stability Board in the United States have demanded that if you're going to trade bonds, you have to have capital. You have to have some of your own money in there. You have to have
right.
a pretty good sized chunk of your own money in there so that if everything starts to go south, you don't just say, whoa, we declare bankruptcy, come rescue us, government.
Yeah, and so you don't say, hey, no, nobody's there to buy your bond because
right.
I don't have any money.
And so it becomes more expensive to trade bonds if you're going to do it responsibly, and there's less profitability in it because of negative interest rates. And as a result, a lot of major bond market makers, and boy, that's a mouthful, have gotten out of the business of making markets in bonds. Now, that's something, if you say five times fast,
right.
you're really smart.
Just real quick, when somebody decides to make a market, bonds are crazy. I mean, if you look at bonds, the number of bonds out there compared to the number of stocks, there's a huge difference. If you look at...
There's a lot more bonds.
Yeah, if I'm just going to say one company, and I use one company often because it's a long-term U.S. company, I'm not talking about them as being particularly good or bad.
Which one?
Ford.
Ford.
Okay, Ford has...
Fix or repair daily.
That was the old statement.
Right.
Yes, it's
yeah.
not. They're much more reliable now.
Okay, right.
Okay. So Ford exists. And Ford has several different classes of stock. So you've got to be up on the preferred stock and the stocks to that company before you buy it so you know what it is. But there's just a few of them. There's just a couple of different kinds. They have thousands of different bonds issued at different times.
And different with different
maturities, different interest rates, different call features. If you think of a school system.
Right, and some of them are collateralized and some of them are not collateralized. Some of them are senior and some of them are not senior. Some of them are junior.
Right.
Some of them are subordinate.
It just as a fun experiment, somebody should try to figure out how many bond offerings are still active at the Temple Independent School District, and then multiply that by districts throughout the United States.
Somebody knows that.
Right. And if you think about that for a minute, you realize suddenly that bonds are much more complex because you have a lot more variables that get in. You've got a lot more of them, and they don't all look, taste, or act the same.
And this is...
So making a market in them means that somebody says, this is, you know, nobody's buying and selling the Temple Independent School District. Fill in the blank. I don't care. Whatever. The stadium on the roof of the swimming pool bond. I'm making that up, obviously.
Stadium on the roof of the swimming
yeah,
pool. I'm going to think about that one.
You
for
need
a while.
To have a stadium on the roof of your swimming pool. I mean, if you're going to do that, you need to do it with a bond offering where the people would come and give you money.
Well, what you need is a stadium roof, swimming pool, senior subordinated, collateralized bond.
Right. One of the jobs of the investment bankers, the ones that bring these bonds to market, is to provide some liquidity in that issue. So the swimming pool roof stadium issue, if somebody shows up and says, hey, I bought this 3 weeks ago, I need some money back, I need to sell it. But you don't have your average citizen in California, New York, Minnesota, or whatever saying, I'm watching the stadium on the roof of the swimming pool in Temple, Texas, bond issue. So the investment bankers say, we're going to make a market there. We'll buy that from you. Now, they don't really want to hold on to it, but it's their job to introduce that to the market. So that's what market makers do. And there's new regulations that say that these guys have to have more of their own money in the game so that they don't just suddenly disappear when you want to sell this bond and nobody is there to buy it from you.
So the issue is that the bond market is safer than it used to be, but it's less profitable, which those two tend to go together.
They do. When you get safer, you tend to be less profitable.
And there is one of those immutable issues in bonds. When interest rates rise, bond values on the open market fall. Because if you had a choice between buying, and I'm going to use an extreme example, if you had two otherwise identical bonds, and one of them will pay you 10% and one of them will pay you 5% per year for the next 10 years, I strongly suspect you would consider the 10% bond to be far more valuable than the 5% bond.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
If the 5% bond is really a 20-year bond that's now 10 years old, and so we're in a 10% interest rate environment. We were in a 5% interest rate environment.
This is an example. We are not in a 10%. This is purely hypothetical.
There was a time when we were in a 10% environment.
Yes.
And so let's just say that time returned, and it's 10 years in the future, and a 5% bond, which, by the way, you can't very well find today, but a 5% bond had been sold. Both of them would effectively have 10 years left until they matured.
So same maturity date, different interest rates.
But one of them has what's called a coupon on it of 10%, the other one has a coupon of 5%. So based on the face value, if you put $10,000, if you put $1,000, let's make it easy.
Yeah, as if any of this is easy.
Which is a bond, by the way, is $1,000. When we talk about a bond, that's $1,000 face. So let's just say your 5% bond, you bought it with $1,000. It's got a $1,000 face on it. It will pay you $50 a year for the next 10 years. And then you got this other bond sitting right next to it, and it will pay you $100 a year for the next 10 years. I can comfortably say that your initial reaction,
this other one with the 10% is more valuable.
10% bond is worth twice as much as the 5% bond. Now, actually, it doesn't work out exactly that way for anybody who really understands this, but for the sake of this discussion, we'll discuss it.
Because the first thing you have to ask is, why are they paying 10% when they only have to pay 5%?
But
because they should be releasing another bond right now to pay off this bond at 5%, or call it if they have that option.
You know, so there's a lot of things that could happen here. But the point is that if you had purchased for $1,000 the 5% bond 10 years later, it's entirely possible that if you needed to sell that bond for some reason, now you may say, well, I'm going to buy that bond and hold it forever to maturity, but let's just say it's in your estate and your children don't feel that way about it. What they would get would be something in the vicinity of $500 for something that you paid $1,000 for. In other words, what they would experience is effectively a 50% loss. Now, again, I want to emphasize that because of amortization and compounding,
we're simplifying, as complex as this example is.
Coriolis effect and the
Heisenberg's involved in
there. The Arctic, what was that Arctic circle? The
ozone hole?
Vortex. The Arctic vortex.
Oh, right.
And the numbers don't work out precisely that way, but suffice to say that that's the issue. Now, here's the point. Interest rates are artificially low right now. They're being held to artificial low periods. I mean, negative interest rates by definition are artificially low.
Yes.
By central banks, if you believe, and not everybody does, that interest rates won't stay artificially low forever.
Well, wait, I have to challenge you on this.
Really?
Yes, I have to challenge you on this, and it's more out of the concept than the specific, because economists do say, and are right in the economic world to say, this is artificially low.
Mm-hmm.
But those of our listeners that are used to dealing with the real world, it's kind of like if you put a weight on top of a boat and you say, all right, that boat is resting artificially low in the water. It's not really artificially low. There's an extra weight on it. It's real. It's a real weight that's making it rest lower in the water.
But and it's not a free market weight.
No. It is something that somebody else put on there. But that doesn't mean it's artificial.
Right.
Well, it's just not needed.
Okay. Gonna call this artificial. What happens is, in times of economic stress, and we are going through a time of economic stress, the Greek problem has reared its head again. It's not making headlines, but the Greeks are on the verge of default once more time.
Right.
And if they do default, we'll get the same whatever we would have gotten before.
Wait. I know a way to increase the ratings of our program right now.
What's that?
Be the first to start with the scary headlines. Let's start with the Grexit talk again. Let's really get into that. We can make an uproar about this and make our own headlines.
We should really start with the Brexit and then go to the Greeks.
Right. The British are taking the headlines away from the Greeks.
Right.
And the Greeks really should be getting – I mean, they've been doing it longer.
The Germans –
first come, first serve. They should get the headlines.
The Germans, once again, are going hardline, and they're saying we are not going to give any more money to the Greeks. And the Greeks saying, that's fine. We'll default on all the –
and the Greeks are going –
all the money we owe.
Yeah, Greeks are going hardline as well. Okay, we're not going to give any more money to you either. Ha!
And if nobody budges, then
nobody gets any money either direction.
Then the Eurozone blows up. But the point I'm saying is we're going through a period of economic stress right now. During periods of economic stress, the interest rates on bonds normally rise because of the increased risk of default. But you look at the interest rates that I quoted to you a few minutes ago across the board, and you realize interest rates are astonishingly low to negative. Why? Because the central banks are keeping them that way in the hope that we won't enter into another recession.
Right. They're trying to make it so that people can afford to get loans, but the banks are then saying it's too hard to get a loan because we're not going to give it to you.
So. The point, by the way, before we do commercials, I just want to say, by the way, the United States' risk of entering a recession is slim to none. Europe arguably is in one.
Yeah, I would say
Japan is arguably in one. China is not. So China and the United States are doing okay. Great Britain is doing all right. The rest of the world is in a world of hurt.
Limping, and yes, the rest of the world is hurt.
And so we're going to break for commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, or we are the Personal Wealth Coach, on this Saturday, April 16th. And we'll be back on the other side for just a moment before the news, and we'll go to our second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. We're almost out of time. Suffice to say that one of those commercials, the one that said that you have no risk, invest your wealth here. It's a really good place to lose a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of money.
So if you'd like to contact us off the air, we'll be back next hour. If you'd like to contact us off the air locally, you can do it at
947-1111.
You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. You can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts. Read our new emails.
But we'll be back next hour with more of the
True.
Personal Wealth Coach.
It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.